Luke chapter 17. Luke chapter 17. Follow along as we read these four verses. Starting at verse number 7. But which of you, having a servant plowing or feeding cattle, will say unto him by and by, when he is come from the field, go and sit down to meat? And will not rather say unto him, make ready wherewith I may sup, and gird thyself and serve me till I have eaten and drunken, and afterwards thou shalt eat and drink? Doth he think, Luke 17, verse number 9, doth he think that servant, because he did the things that were commanded him, I trow not? So likewise, ye, when ye shall have done all those things which are commanded you, say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done that which was our duty to do. A couple of weeks ago, several weeks ago, we started thinking about this thought of servanthood, what it is to be a servant of Christ, what it is to be a servant of our fellow man. Tonight I want to speak to you on this thought of the sweat and the seriousness of a servant. The sweat and seriousness of a servant. Now, like I said, this is a parable. A parable is an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. It gives us some instruction. It gives us some principles about service. And many of these instructions and principles have been ignored in our day. Excuse me, I've got a mint in my mouth. I've got a little dry throat, so if I get it, it's a lifesaver, so it's got a hole in it. If I swallow it, I won't gonna die. You know that's why they call them lifesavers, don't you? You got that hole in there and you still breathe. Many of these principles, many of these instructions have been ignored in our day, but they are greatly needed. Service is not easy. Service to the Lord, serving our mankind, our fellow man, service is not easy. Like I said, this parable does not encourage us to think that serving God or being a servant of Him, of His, is soft work. First of all, I want us to note the sweat of the servant. The sweat. In this parable, it shows us that much sweat will be part of any or our service for Christ. And we see it in two ways. First, the hardness of the service, and then the hours that this servant put in. The hardness, and then the hours. Let's note the hardness of the work. Look at verse number 7 one more time. It says, but which of you, having a servant plowing or feeding cattle? Both of these jobs, both of these occupations require hard work. Both of them. And in those days, it was even harder than it is in our day. One of the things I love driving across the Midwest in those big, big wheat fields is to see this dust cloud way up there. And then when you get closer to it, it's a big John Deere tractor, and it looks like it's got this disc, and they look like, looks like a half of a football field behind them going along through there and disking up the ground. And everywhere it goes, it's just a cloud of dust. That in itself is hard work. But it was even harder in this day that Christ told this parable. And the text says that the servant was plowing. He's not playing. He's plowing It's not a playground, it is a plowground. Even in our day, in the modern technology, modern machinery, it can still be some hard work. It's long hours. Farming is one of the hardest jobs. Farming, you are subject to the weather. You are subject to the pestilence. You are subject to the lack of or too much rain. The weather. And it can be hard. Elijah, when he called Elisha in 2 Kings 19, the Bible says that Elisha was out there with 12 yoke of oxen, plowing with 12 yoke. That's a big John Deere of that day. I mean, you think about it. You have a yoke, that's two, but he had 12 yoke. 12 times, huh? 12. Well, that's what it says. 12 yoke of oxen. I don't know unless he was over 12 yoke of oxen and other people were plowing too. That's what I read it. He was maybe like the foreman and he had 12 yoke of oxen plowing. I don't think it was 12 or 24 of them pulling one big, you know, disc. But the fact is he was a worker. He was busy. When Elijah came by and called him into the Lord's service, he was already used to hard work. He wasn't a lazy man. He wasn't one sitting there with his iPhone and playing. He knew what it was to put in long hours out in the sun. And I bet there were times in Elisha's service for the Lord that those 12 yoke of oxen looked easy. A good day of plowing is about as hard a day of work as a man can have, even feeding cattle. Arlene and I, we like to watch this. It's a reality show. It's on the National Geographic channel, Kilters, from up there in Ketchumah Bay area. They raise cattle. Cattle work is very hard. You need to watch that show sometime. They're always pulling a calf. They've got cows that they have to keep the bears from. There was one calf, one young bull, and they've kind of followed his life from the time they drug him across the river and about drowned him because he was 2 days old. Calf 10-13. He got attacked by a grizzly. You can see where the grizzly grabbed him there and bit him in the neck. And he survived it, and he's now a good-sized bull. But he had all kinds of things. At one time, he had this big abscess on his neck, and the cattleman, what was his name? Anyway, he had to. I'm just talking about how it's not just having pretty cows out there in the field. To take care of cattle, to feed cattle, is more than just throwing hay out to them. There's a lot of work, a lot of work. I'll never forget the first time I ever pulled a calf. And that's not, you know, I want to be at the other end of a cow. But you know what, your life, you've done it. Oh, it's not fun. But it's hard work. And then to have the calf to die, or to have the cow to die. First time I ever did that, the calf had been dead too long. And when we pulled it out in pieces. I mean, and the hair had already begun to fall off. The cow eventually died too. We weren't able to stop the infection. But it's hard work. Here we have, yeah. That's what they did on that show the other day. Yeah, he got down and blowed in the nostrils and rubbing that calf. They did that very same thing. He had a calf, and they pulled it out and was rubbing him and blew into his nostrils. And he finally stood up, shook himself. But I'm trying to say this. Here we have a man plowing, and we have a man feeding cattle. There's hard work involved. Now, Jesus has said, I want you to look at this earthly story. And we're going to relate this to the things of God. Now, so there's hard work involved. Neither one of them is easy. We find many church members who are willing to do things at church if it doesn't necessitate hard work. But whenever work is involved, they want to be absent or not be involved. When hard work is involved, then they don't want to be involved. However, if we eliminate the hard work from God's service, it will eliminate most of the work that God has for us to do in His vineyard. Looking for easy jobs. I was talking to a pastor not too long ago, and he asked me this particular question. He said, "Are there any churches in your area that needs a pastor?" And by the way, let's be in prayer. You know Brad and Barb that went to Heidelberg? They took over that ministry down there at the Presbyterian Church. They didn't have nobody. I know. And they took over that ministry. And they've had like 30 kids and about 12 adults in the last little bit. I seen them the other night at Dockside. And they said, continue praying for that ministry. And they don't know where it's going to go. Brad, he said he never thought about preaching, but this has just kind of fell into his lap. But he's willing to work hard. And Barbara is willing to work hard, and they're doing that for the Lord. But this pastor called me, this minister called me, and asked if there was a church there, and said, I want one that's got a parsonage, and I want one that's got this and got that, and in other words, he wanted an easy pastorate. Well, I don't know of any easy pastorates. Even when you have those things, there's hardness. There's things that come along with it. God's business will never succeed without any hard work. Then I want you to note the hours. He was plowing or feeding cattle, or maybe both. Notice look at verse number 8. The master, the servant's master said, make ready wherewith I may sup. Now get the picture here. One of the features of this parable is the long hours the servant had to work. I mean, think about it. He has been in the field all day. And I'm sure his day did not start at 10 in the morning. He'd been out there probably at daylight. And he's been out in the field. He's been with the cattle. He's been out there all day, either plowing, feeding, or doing both. And now, at the end, what we would consider the end of the day, he is told to prepare the meal for the master. This certainly extended his hours. And there are no microwaves. There are no instant foods. Just add water and stir. There are no deliveries or pickup. Some of it wasn't for that. Some of us would starve. But, I mean, think about it. I mean, this is, in that day, he was out in the field plowing, doing cow, and now comes in. You know what it is to prepare a meal from scratch? Sometimes I remember the day when my grandmother would come home, go to the barn, go down to the hen house, get a hen out of there and cut its head off, pluck him, and put him on, and we'd have it for supper that night. You're talking about 4 hours or so before mealtime, starting to have to just to get it together. Sometimes that's what it takes. But now we just take it out of the freezer, just take the saran wrap off, put it in the microwave, 3.5 minutes, and, you know, put it in a plate, and everybody thinks you've slaved all day. I know the tricks. Throw a little sweat on your brow and call it a day. But we notice the hours. There are none of these things. One thing is for sure, he is not on union hours. All right? He's not on union hours. Not only will our service for Christ be hard work, but it may mean long hours, longer hours. Union hours is 9 to 5. Not that you, in some, but I 10-hour day. All right. He's not on union hour. He's probably doing it more than that. I remember I was part of a union. The injection molding plastic plant union. In fact, I joined after I got fired. And me and Arlene, we were a week from being married. And I'll be real quick on this. I was real quick. I was been working 1 week before our wedding day. And I come home, and I called her, and I said, "Honey, we may have to put off the wedding. I just got fired." And I went through the whole story. But a union representative came to my aid, saw what happened, came to my aid, spoke up for me, and even though I wasn't a member, I hadn't paid any dues yet, I was not a member of the union. In fact, at that time, in that plant, I was anti-union because I'd seen some things go on, and I was 19 too, okay? But they got my job back. It came to my aid at the time. I became a union member. I started paying my dues. But here we see this man is working long, hard hours that are involved. Thank God, they're not everybody will do that. Not everybody. But thank God there are a few like Joshua. When Joshua said, and if it seems evil unto you, serve the Lord. Choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of your father served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we are going to serve the Lord. We will serve the Lord. Hard hours. Long hours. Hard work. Long hours are going to be involved a lot of times. People a lot of times don't realize how much time and work it goes in to run a ministry, to have the different things. I think about the radio ministry. I think about the sermon audio. I think about the school ministry. I think about the pulpit ministry. I think about Sunday school. I think about future growth, what we're going to do. There's things. There's sometimes I talk with this person or I talk to my wife. There's a lot of time that goes in. Sometimes it's long hours. And then you get the unexpected stuff. "Pastor, will you come and talk to me? I'm at the clinic. I've got a friend. I don't even know. I don't know how many times I've gotten in the car. Somebody would call me because they want a preacher at Alicia Roberts. Somebody has, been in a car accident, or somebody, been hurt. And I've left the house at 10 o'clock at night. I've left the house at midnight. I've sat up there for several times. Even church members, that incident with Brian, no one called me and told, but we found out and we go out. That's what a pastor does. And if you're not willing to work hard and to work long, then service for the Lord is not for you. Jesus is using this parable and describing it. Notice something else. I want you to see the seriousness. And we note this in three different areas. The seriousness is noted, first of all, it is noted in his promptness. Look at verse number 7 again. Now, I found this phrase very interesting. Verse number 7. It says, By which of you, having a servant plowing or feeding cattle, will say unto him, by and by. Note that word, by and by. When he is come from the field. I looked up that word, by and by. And you know what it means? It means immediately. It doesn't sound like it, does it? Because in our day, it means something in the future. We sing the song, In the Sweet By and By. It's a song talking about heaven, but it's out there in the future. But here it says, by and by. Here's what the strong says. It says, direct. That is, at once. Soon as. Forthwith. Immediate. Shortly. Straightway. Therefore, the word by and by teaches promptness. It teaches promptness. Now, when God gives us orders, if we're going to serve Him and serve Him right, we need to drop everything that we are doing and do His will. This does not appeal to those who are not serious about their service. It does not appeal to them at all. They have many other priorities. If one is serious about something, you will see it in the promptness of their actions. Procrastination has been... Oh, my wife thinks that's my worst enemy. And it is in certain things. I do put off dishes. And I put off... I do my share. I got a nice dishwasher. procrastination. Anybody have any problem with procrastination? Huh? Don't point your finger. You got four of them when you... Procrastination. Do you have that problem every once in a while? Uh-huh. We all do when it comes to certain things. Do you have that problem, Andrew? You come by it honestly, son. Honestly. I know. You wait till the 14th. No. But procrastination is not being serious when it comes to the service of Christ. Procrastination is really rebellion. It is. Rebellion and disobedience. Today, by and by, that means the opposite than immediate. Just listen to your kids when they answer you. Hey, come over here and do something. In a minute. After a while, okay. You know that, and you go about your business because they said okay. What does okay mean? I'll get to it when I get to it, or whatever. That's not good in the Lord's business. I found this out in the King James Bible when the translators, they translated this by and by, that means immediate. Of the 80 times that it's used, the 80 times that the Greek word is used, it is translated immediate or straight forth or straightway, except right here. Here and another portion of Scripture, you use the word by and by. Why? I don't know. While all the other times they said immediate or straight forth or straight with, but here they left it by and by. We notice his seriousness noted in his promptness, but notice his seriousness is also, this is the seriousness of the servant, is also noted in his sacrificialness. Look at verse number 8. It says, and will not rather say unto him, make ready wherewith I may sup, and gird thyself, and serve me, till I have eaten and drunken, and afterwards thou shalt eat and drink. Now that last phrase, afterwards thou shalt eat and drink. The seriousness of service, this servant, requires sacrifice. Now, in our text, the servant has had to wait until his master had been fed before he himself ate. Now, remember, we talked about this servant. He is a bond servant. Paul said he was a servant of the Lord Jesus Christ. He's a bond servant. And so he had to sacrifice his own comforts. He had to sacrifice maybe his own pleasures to serve his master. That does not fit in our society today. Because of this seriousness about serving, he had to give up time. He had to give up energy. Though he was no doubt tired, no doubt weary, he still prepared and served the meal to his master before he ate. His own wants, his own needs took a back seat. He sacrificed his comforts and the needs, his needs to serve. Not many professing Christians have a strong seriousness about them when it comes to the Lord's service. And if sacrifice is involved, then you can just forget it. When one is serious about the things of God, they will be willing to make some sacrifices. Now, we may not be out in the fields. We may not be at the meal. We might not be at the. We may have been at the shop all day. We may be at the store, at the office, in the classroom, working all day. But when we finish our work, it may be that we might have to sacrifice some comforts to head to church. One of the things I liked about Marvin, and Marvin, remember the days that he was working at the hatchery, worked long days, and we would, on Wednesday night we'd have Bible study, and he would come in here in his work clothes. Manda would bring dinner, and while we were reading our missionary letters and having prayer time, a lot of time he was sitting back there eating. And I said, I commended him. Not many would, after a long day, working out in the weather, in the cold, in the snow, in the rain, and would come by church. Of course, he knew the plate would be here, too. Now, if he had to go home, Amanda was going to be here. There wouldn't be nothing at the house. But the thing is, there was a certain amount of sacrifice that went involved. You know what I said? I said, he's serious about coming to Bible study. He was serious about being in the house of God. Now, you don't find that everywhere in our day. Then I want you to notice something else. His seriousness about service is also seen in his humbleness. Look at verse number 8 again. It says, afterwards, thou shalt eat and drink. Here the servant is put at the back of the line at mealtime. The servant is put at the back of the line when it comes to mealtime. The servant doesn't not have the honor to eat first. Some people will say, Pastor, you go on. Get it when we have a potluck. I'm sorry, that's just not in me. I want to wait around. And I've noticed some of you men and some of you other members at the, we kind of hold back. That's what servants do. We're all standing out here. But everybody else going. Kevin says, you ain't going, I'm going. No. But we try to. That's what a servant does. We humble ourselves. We're not going to be the first, especially when we have visitors. I don't have to worry about it. I'm preaching to the choir in a lot of this area. But we see it here. Afterwards, he says, thou shalt eat and drink. Now, this really humbles and it kills pride and it emphasizes lowliness of the servant's position. The emphasis on humbleness is a rebuke to those who will not do anything, will not serve unless given recognition. I was part of a church one time, and I mean, if you didn't recognize Sister So-and-so for this flower, oh my goodness. I mean, each week a family would bring in a flower or something in memory of some uncle that passed away 30 years ago. And if you forgot, oh my goodness. Or if, you know, you didn't shake everybody's hand and you heard about it. And if they picked up a paper on the parking lot, you had to recognize them. And you talk about oppression. You talk about that. I mean, there was no liberty in that at all. It was so, I felt so sorry for the pastor. Because everything, if he didn't stroke them, and if he didn't, you know, I try to think about it, and when it's right, I commended Ryan, and we thanked Ryan for the this. But Ryan, you would have been here if I hadn't said a word. No, because there's been times I hadn't said a word, just totally forgot, and they come, because that's not what we're about. And I thank God for that. But there are some places we see here, I mean, there are those that won't serve if they're not duly recognized and honored. Much service for Christ will be a humbling experience for the flesh. If we are a true servant of Christ, we may have to labor in some forsaken place. I think of missionaries from time to time. One of our missionaries, Brother Wheel Muldoon, he's doing a tremendous, tremendous job. I have a dream. I would love to go visit him there in New Guinea. And I want to take Brother John. I'm trying to wait till Brother John retires, and I hope his health all holds up. But in a place so obscured, back in the back jungles, and I don't know if you've been on Facebook and saw some of the pictures. The grass, I mean, they meet in grass huts. This building is a temple compared to what they sit on. Thank God for the hard chairs you got, because they sit on the floor on a grass mat. And there he is preaching the gospel, and people are being saved. People are being baptized. I mean, but in obscurity, he told his children, he said, if you want to see me, you're going to have to come here, because I'm never leaving. This is his last hurrah. I'm going to die on the field. Used to be a song, one of our friends, Shook Boy, I want to die on the battlefield for my Lord. He wrote that just before he died with cancer, it was. I want to die on the battlefield for my Lord. And it may be in a place of obscurity. And some people won't do that. Serving the Lord may mean serving in obscurity, maybe giving up a position. Brother Walt Muldoon, I mean, he was ready to retire. He was been in former Air Force, pastored a church in Cheyenne, Wyoming, a large church, had it made. And God said, I want you in New Guinea. He resigned that church and said, I'm going to New Guinea. Within 6 months, he raised his support, and he's been in New Guinea ever since. He said, this is where God's called him. That's a true servant that would answer the call of the Lord. Pride cannot be part of a person if they're going to serve the Lord well. Verse number 8 says, afterwards thou shalt. So we see two things here. We see the hardness of the work. It's not a playground. Many times it's a battleground. The servant was plowing, not playing. And the long hours, after he had been out there for 10 hours, coming in, he didn't just punch. You know, there's a lot of people that punch the clock and wait for the paycheck. There's supposed to be a little bit of work between punching the clock and the paycheck. But they do. They want to punch the clock and wait for the check. You won't find that in the Lord's service. It was hardness. It was the long hours. He was prompt. He was serious because of his promptness. He immediately did what his servant told him. He was serious because of his humbleness. He was also serious when it came to his sacrifice. He sacrificed his own comforts. If we're going to serve the Lord, or serve our fellow man, it may take some of these. We have these two young men here in uniform. They've been over in Ketchikan. And what they're doing now is really nothing, is it? I mean, you'll be on. I mean, you're learning. The real sacrifice may come one day when Uncle Sam says, "We're deploying, we're taking your unit, and you're going to go." They're going to have to give up the security of home. They're going to have to say goodbye, because they have committed themselves to serve our country, to serve you and I. And it may come down to that. We're living in a terrible time. I was just looking on the news and getting caught up with some of the news headlines. There at Fort Riley in Kansas, one of our servicemen. ISIS had infiltrated the United States Army. And they just made an arrest. He was planning to detonate a bomb there on Fort Riley. And they, because of our counterintelligence, they were able to arrest him and stop that. That was in Kansas, the heartland of America. He said his goal was to form another Fort Hood. And he was affiliated with ISIS. Another man from Wisconsin was arrested at the airport because he was leaving the country to join ISIS because he was also a sex offender here. That's a group to go join. I mean, they should let him. Maybe he'll get killed. But then in New York, we had the two women, ISIS affiliated, arrested, plotting to use propane gas canisters to detonate bombs. The mother of the two boys, the brothers that did the Boston Marathon bombing. She's in another country. I don't know exactly where. She was in the headlines, praising her. She said, "My sons are the best." And she said, "Death to America and death to those Christians." I don't know what our country's up against. They're negotiating with Iran, at the same time about this. They're saying, "Death to America! Death to America! Death to America!" Christians around the world. You heard about the campus in Kenya. I sent word out to check about Josiah and if there any of his people was in. That's that was a little bit further out of Nairobi, but there was a mall one. Now 176 Christians died. They pulling people out if they could not quote a verse, a passage from the Quran, they killed them. It's happening over and over around the world. We may be, and I used to be, Fred, you mentioned this. I used to be of the persuasion, all the stuff during the tribulation, I ain't going to worry about it, I'm going to be out of here. All that stuff is going to happen after. I tend to believe that we're going to see a lot more. Now, I don't think we're going to be in the heart of the trip because we're not been the church, the believers have not been appointed unto the day of wrath. But there might be a time when Christians, even here in America, I've thought about this today, if we've been put on trial for being a Christian, is there going to be enough evidence to convict us? A lot of our Christian brethren across the world are dying for their faith. Oh, I don't know if they're really Christians. Well, they died. They were Christian. They were more Christian than some of us. Amen? They were more Christian than some of us. We're afraid to tell somebody, some of our co-workers, I'm a born-again child of God. But they were told to convert or die, and they said, "We will not." What does the Bible say about those in the book of Revelation? They died. They sealed in their own blood. It's time to be servants and not slaves to our flesh and to our own desires.